We've qualified for the World Cup. Go and compete.
Hello and welcome to episode 19 of This Is Football with Paul and Trev. How are you, Trev?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad, Paul. This week's episode is sponsored again by our good friends in McDavay for all your Apple repairs. Have we an email address for them, Trev?
Well, we've a website, www.mcdavay.ie. That's www.mcdavay.ie.
And don't forget to use your 10% discount code, which is This Is Football. Anyway, Trev, we'll get into last week's results. There's not many. The weather caused havoc.
Yeah, I'm surprised any games went ahead, so but there is about three or four there.
Yeah, we have a couple. So our under 8C, this is on Saturday, had a win away to Maynooth. Our under 11's F had a draw away to Maynooth. Our under 14's lost 1-0 away to Maynooth. Our under 16's had in the SFAI had a cup draw away to Balbriggan and they won 3-2. We actually have a match report on that one. And that was all the results, Trev.
Yeah. So
will I get into that match report?
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
So this match report came in from Bren. The lads went 1-0 down. They got back into the game 1-1 through Ben Pitchard. The lads again were 2-1 down at half time. Remember, this is away to Balbriggan, so I can imagine what the weather was like out there, out on the cliff.
Oh yeah, it's probably actually glorious now that I think, because it's always bad out there when it's good here, so.
They got back into it again, went 2-2 through Matthew Dolan. And then in the last couple of minutes, Matthew popped up with the winner to make it 3-2 Dunboyne into the next round of the SFAI.
Brilliant.
Well done, boys.
Well done. Excellent. Thanks for the report, Brian, as well.
Let's move on. That was all. Let's move on to this week's fixtures, which is probably as less.
Do we have last week's results for Saturday? Oh, you went through them just there now? Yeah, I'm losing. Sorry, yeah.
Are you with the bullets here today?
Hello and welcome to this week's episode.
Jesus.
Sorry, yeah. So the only games that are actually scheduled for this week are the under-13s have an SFAI trophy on Saturday away to Rock Celtic in Dundalk. Bit of a trek out, but they're the good. They enjoy them.
Dundalk.
So that's good. And the second team are playing at home at 12 o'clock against Raheny. Scott Crawford sent it on. Thanks, Scott. There isn't many games. I know it's the bank holiday weekend, but again, I always say try and get out to these games. The over 35s had got a game. I'll fill you in on the over 35s. They don't have a game tomorrow. It's off for,
it's cancelled, is it?
Let's just say there's that story will come out again, but it's not on tomorrow. But they play, so update on McKelvey had two games left and they won their game last week against River Valley, so they are 3 points ahead in the league. But Dunboyne have, and they're finished their game, the fixtures. Dunboyne have one game against Marino, which is now on next Thursday. Time to be confirmed and venue to be confirmed, but that's away next Thursday. If they win that, they actually.
Why isn't it this weekend?
Don't.
I thought we were on this weekend.
Yeah, right? No.
It's moved.
So.
That's moved to a midweek.
Yeah, and again, we'll talk about that in don't press the red button, Paul.
Okay.
So so that's on Thursday. So if they win that against Marino, they finish at the same points at the top of the league, and it's a playoff against McKelvey, which is looking to be the weekend of the 18th of November. But that's all to be confirmed. All I would say is best of luck, lads. You've done excellent up to now. Hopefully, you can get it through. If not. Obviously, we want them to beat McKelvey in the playoff, but we have to get there first. So just pick up your 3 points on Thursday, and we'll go from there. What we'll do is we'll definitely have, that's in a couple of weeks, we'll definitely have a couple of the lads in, hopefully from the over 35s, talking about the season so far before that.
That's all. I'm presuming goal difference doesn't count in the over 35s.
No.
Okay.
So. No, so it's down to points, and it doesn't go even to go down to head-to-head, because if it did, I think they drew with McKelvey here, and obviously Dunboyne beat them out there a few weeks ago, so it would mean that Dunboyne won the league. So unfortunately not. No, it just goes up by points. So that's for this week coming.
Yeah, let's get into the Premiership. How did we get on last week?
We both done well. So this week, we'll just leave it, will we? Do you want to go through last week's?
Yeah, you obviously lost, so let's go through it.
Liverpool, Everton, both said home. Yeah. Bournemouth, Wolves, both said draw, both wrong. City, Brighton, both said home. Yeah. Newcastle, Palace, I said home. You also, you both said home. About right there. No, we're about wrong there.
What was it?
Forest Luton. That was a draw. We both said home. Chelsea Arsenal. We both said draw. Yeah. Sheffield United. Man United. I said, obviously, didn't say United. I said draw. You said away. I have to stop with my heart and go with my head in future.
Got away with that.
Because that really makes the difference. Well, not Villa, West Ham. You said home. I said draw. Spurs, Fulham.
Who won that game? Villa won.
Villa hammered them. Villa are fine. 4-1, wasn't it? Yeah, 4-1. Spurs, we both said home. So you won that one 7-5. So it's 5-2.
It's 5-2 every week. I must be no, about 9-2.
No. Just because you can't.
Just read over. There's no way it could be still 5-2.
Okay. Do you know what? Do you want to do this in future?
Yeah. Right. Me off here.
Right. Palace Spurs on Friday evening.
Oh, that's tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah.
So. It has to be Spurs.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to say away as well. So away. Chelsea, Brentford.
Chelsea.
I'm going to say Chelsea as well. Arsenal, Sheffield United.
Arsenal.
Bournemouth, Burnley.
Draw.
Wolves, Newcastle.
Yeah, where are you picking?
Oh, you went draw. Sorry, I went draw. I wrote it down, but you can see.
Yeah. The listeners can't see I'm writing it down.
Wolves, Newcastle.
Newcastle.
Away win. Yeah, I'm going to say away win for the listeners. West Ham, Everton.
I
didn't. West Ham, Everton.
West Ham. Home.
West Ham home. Home, yeah, same. Villa, Luton.
Villa.
Yeah. Same, home. Brighton, Fulham.
Oh. Brighton.
Ah, I said Brighton as well. Liverpool, Forest. I'll say Liverpool. United and City. We have to go different. Oh, no, we don't have to. I suppose we both.
Have we gone on the same?
I think so. Yeah, we have.
Oh, I'd have to go City. I've went United
all the
time.
Well, I go United.
Well,
I'll go a draw. No, I'm giving them a, you know, I'll go a draw, even though City are going
to. Different
then. I can't. I have to go City. I have to go City. Yeah, no.
That's only so you won't lose.
No, yeah.
You have to go on the same.
Hold on a second. Yeah, we are going the same. But you went the same as me as well. Like, it's not.
You're assumed. You're slipping me away.
No.
I called out every answer for, so how did I go the same as you?
Every week I have mine written down. I didn't copy you.
Ah, here.
Do you want it? Okay, I'll tell you what you do, right? See the. Let me see.
Look.
So see the Arsenal Sheffield United. Do you want to go Sheffield United?
I'll win next week and still 4-2.
No. Do you want to go Sheffield United away win, yeah? Do you want to change it? If you want to change, I'm not changing mine. Do you want to change one?
Why would I change that?
Yeah, exactly. Why would I change my opinion?
Right, I'm going to change one. Give me a look. Just a second.
Oh, if you win it on that one.
I'm going to go. Bournemouth home win.
That's quite easy. Right,
that's quite easy.
That could happen though. Right.
They could all happen.
No, well, I mean, United are not going to. Anyway, right, so that's.
Mother of Christ.
That's everything, right? So, anything else to add before we.
No, we have coming up in the next part of the show a great interview with Barry Ferguson of the DDSL. So we'll bring that up after the break.
Yep.
Let's rock.
This is Adam MacDonald from Bohemians Football Club, and I listen to This Is Football.
So welcome back to part two, where I'm delighted to be joined by Barry Ferguson. How are you, Barry?
All good. All good. Thanks, lads.
Barry, give us your current role today.
I recently started as director of football with the DDSL, so really enjoying my time. I'm a couple of months in, getting to meet loads of people and seeing loads of football, so really enjoying it so far.
Deadly. Before we, there's loads of questions there. Before we go there, let's go back to your own football career. I presume you played football, Barry?
Yeah, so I grew up in Artane.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I grew up in Artane and would have played for Kevin's and Home Farm. So my mum and dad are both from sort of the Whitehall area, and they would have had a history of all the family, brothers and sisters. There's 11 in my mum's family and 16 in my dad's, so small enough families back then. But yeah, they would have all had a sort of a playing career at St. Kevin's and probably started off there. And would have gone to Home Farm then when I was probably 11, 12, and played there till I joined the senior team then, which would have been League of Ireland First Division, Home Farm Everton at the time.
Yeah, that's right.
There was a little partnership there. So played in the First Division there, and really enjoyed my time there, and got a move to Coventry City from there. We played in the League Cup against Pats and in the summer, and Coventry had somebody over watching the game, and the following week I'd signed for Premiership team, and amazing time. Had 4 years in Coventry, never played for the first team, was never at that level, but really enjoyed my time over there, learnt loads, went out on loan a few times, Colchester, Northampton, Hartlepool, and some of them were good and some of them were not so good, but again, massive learning experiences, and probably the biggest thing over there, I met my wife Sarah over there, so that was sort of that was sort of really good, and but really enjoyable time over there. Would have kept in contact with the league and seen what was going on with the League of Ireland back home. Had opportunities to sort of stay over there in different capacities, but made a decision to move back home to Longford Town. My manager or assistant manager that was at Home Farm Everton, Alan Matthews, had gone into Longford Town, and ended up signing for Longford Town, and that was probably the real start of my footballing career. As a professional and as a senior player, I would have played reserves with Coventry, and you know, you're playing against the Arsenals and the Spurs and the West Ham, and you're playing against sort of some senior players who are coming back from injury and stuff like that, but it wasn't really, you know, full contact sort of professional football, and probably felt I got that when I got to Longford, because the League of Ireland was really competitive, and you know, really started enjoying me football when I came back there. Was lucky enough to be made captain there, and had an amazing sort of 4 seasons. We went on to win the FAI Cup twice, and we won the League Cup, got the 4 cup finals in a row. We're actually 20 years now this year since the first cup final. An amazing time at Longford, and some really good players. Moved from there then to go back full time to Bowes, and went back to college and to UCD to do sports management, and moved to Bowes. Gareth Farley was the manager. Had a year there and signed for Rovers, so that was it.
Just go from Bowes to Rovers.
So there's not many.
That was
interesting. Again, Rovers were a club on the up at the time, and you see where they've got to now at this stage, which is amazing. Retired through injury, Shamrock Rovers. So I had another year left on a contract, and had a hip injury, and that I just couldn't recover from, and probably 3-4 years ago now I got my hip replaced from that. So probably one of the regrets that I had was I didn't have the operation earlier, because I was been limping around in work for the guts of 10 years. Like,
right, two questions. One, you meant just bringing back to Coventry. Who would have been? I know you said you didn't stay at the start in the first team, but who would have been the manager around then? Obviously, that was
Gordon Strachan.
Thinking it might have been him.
The players that were there were amazing, and I was lucky enough to be sort of in the first team squad, sort of training with them all the time. So, like, Gary McAllister was there, and he went from Coventry to Liverpool, and went and won everything with Liverpool. Robbie Keane joined us for a year and then went off.
Who didn't he join for a year?
Yeah. And so he was again amazing quality player and great lad.
Peter Unlove and all these.
No, so they were just gone. So you'd have had the Richard Shaw, Paul Williams, Gary Breen actually was there.
Right.
Really good lad, really good player as well. So Yeah, Yusuf Chippo, Mustafa Hadji.
Oh wow!
You know, so some serious players at that time.
And the next question, you know, what position did he actually play?
So I was a centre back. Yeah. So I was a centre back, and probably wasn't a ball playing centre back. So I would have been sort of quite aggressive, I was a defender. But I think the League of Ireland was a good level for me. Mm. I think that was probably my level that I got there, and I sort of done quite well when I came back here.
Can you remember the call from Coventry? Like, who gets that call? Does your father get it?
It was weird because and it's a roller coaster. I went into training on the Monday and was told that Coventry had put in a bid for me and it was agreed, so I had to go over. So went over on the Wednesday.
So this is all out of the blue for you. You're just rocking into training.
I'm just rocking into training on the Monday.
That's something else. Saying,
No idea.
You didn't even know. Had you anyone else looking at the time or?
No. So like I would have gone on a few trials when I was a kid, and so it never really worked out.
Just trying to paint a picture because this is deadly.
Yeah. So I went into training on the Monday. I was 18. And went into training on the Monday, 17, 18, and was told that Coventry had put in an offer and it was accepted. Went over to Coventry on the Wednesday with my dad and the manager, Liam O'Brien was there at the time, so he was going over to look after the home farm deal, and agreed a deal on the either Wednesday evening or Thursday morning.
So who was that? Your dad?
Myself and my dad.
Yeah,
sitting in an office and sort of, this is what it is.
This is what you want. Yeah, this is what you want.
You know, yeah. Wow. I just wanted to be a footballer, so yeah. I didn't really care what sort of the contract was about. So, agreed a deal on the Thursday, train on the Friday, played a game on the Saturday.
That quick.
And Flew home on the Saturday and flew back on the Monday morning.
And you were in there?
Yeah, so and that was it.
And was there anyone from the Kevins, so obviously landed your year as such, because 17, 18 is kind of late enough now in today's market.
I would say back then it was, though, wasn't
it? No, back then it wasn't. That's what I'm saying. That was kind of normal. Now it's like they're gone at 14, 15, if not earlier. But was there anyone else around your kind of group that went over, kind of that done well?
Yeah, so we had an amazing team with Home Farm, Steve McPhail, Richard Dunn, I think six of my team went away.
Out of one squad,
yeah. So
I actually played against you in the semi-final.
Paul Donnelly went to Leeds. It was an amazing sort of team. We sort of would have won leagues and cups them lads were amazing. Like Richie was amazing at that time. Steve McPhail was amazing.
Yeah, and Richie centre half then, I presume.
Yeah. I would have played all over the place a little bit as a schoolboy. So I would have played in midfield. I would have played up front, and found my position at the back. But the lads were amazing, really good age group. Was the sort of the Damien Duff, Robbie Keane, that era.
Huge amount of talent.
Yeah, and seriously, I think I played against Richie Dunn, Steve McPhail in a
semi-final. Surely we're not the same age.
Yeah. Oh, no, sorry.
Surely we're not the same age.
No, I'm definitely younger than you. I'd have to get the year of that. I'll come back to you on that one anyway. We definitely played Home Farm. We beat us 2-1.
Thanks for that, Barry. I love that.
I'm
going to clip that and just send it out. No, that's brilliant. I suppose it would have been like yourself and your dad. What a proud moment for your dad going over. Obviously yourself, but you now a bit older can appreciate that. But for him.
Yeah, it was something that I'd been on trials and sort of got a little bit probably little bit down, you know, because the experiences haven't went great of some of the trials and I hadn't given up because football was still my life and look, it still is today, but you sort of get to a certain age and think that bow has passed, but I was lucky enough to be playing senior football in the League of Ireland, which was again very competitive. And again, we were in the first division and we were playing against Premier Division teams again, which is another sort of step up and massive learning experience. So to have that opportunity at that time was amazing. And again, it was a dream of mine to go and play for the club. And then, you know, I'm walking in on the Monday and it's like, you know, Gordon Strachan is your manager. You know what I mean? And it's like Gary Breen, who I've watched play for Ireland. You know what I mean? And
probably didn't feel real.
I've watched him as a centre back
playing
for Ireland and trying to learn stuff from him. And like, it's like they become like your colleagues and your friends. And it's just so surreal. Like,
before we go on to your current role, I know we've mentioned that just on the Ireland side of things, I know you played under 21s. What, give us a bit about how you got on there and.
Yeah, I would have again, like, that my age group was really competitive and I probably wasn't involved in representative football up until probably the age of 16 when everybody else had left and I was still in the DDSL. But like at that age group, like, there would have been Richard Dunn and Jason Gavin. I don't know what Jason was an amazing player as well. And he was at Middlesbrough, so they were sort of the two mainstays of centre backs for the team. So if either one of them wasn't involved, like I sort of generally sort of seemed to come into squads. But got into played, I think probably my first time was under 16, 17 or in around that time. Played for the 18s and then ended up in the under 20 squad playing in the World Cup in Nigeria, so that was amazing. Brian Kerr, Noel O'Reilly, you know, traveling the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We'd been to Porto, so I just missed out on the Euro squad that they won the Euro. So again, that was an amazing achievement by the group. And then Richie, I think, pulled out of the World Cup squad because he was playing first team football for Everton. So I sort of got into that squad, played, we'd done quite well, we got knocked out by Nigeria, I think, in the last 16 of the World Cup. So
brilliant, like, brilliant experience, and
Duffer was there, Robbie was there, you know, so some really, really good players.
And obviously the World Cup was amazing and all that. Was there any one particular game that you play that would be like, this is that it really stands out, not necessarily for who you're playing, but just the experience of playing
it's mad, like every time you play it was just amazing. Like, and then I went on to play for the 21s and again that was another, like, you know, you're sort of getting closer and closer to that first team, like, you know. But any time you play it for Ireland was amazing, like, you know. And it was just and it's whether you're called in late or whether you're included in the squad, like, on that day you're one of the 20 players in the country in your age group that's selected to play for Ireland. Like, there's hundreds of thousands of people and kids, and, you know, so it's an amazing sort of achievement, and you don't realise it when you're there, but it is always like a really proud moment. Like, Ireland is special, like, you know.
You mentioned one name, sorry Paul, I'm asking loads of questions, but you just mentioned something there, and we've said this to other people that we've spoken to, but you mentioned he loves him, Brian Kerr.
Brian was brilliant with us at that time, and again it was a different time. You know, like, it's not like, you know, 20 odd years ago was society was different, you know. So it was just, you just look forward to coming in, you know, and the crack was great, and Noel would get the guitar out in the every evening, and you'd be singing songs in the corridors, and Brian made you feel, made you understand what it was like to play for Ireland, like, you know, and he you know, some of his team talks would be amazing, and he'd be referencing, you know, like, these haven't played in this stadium and that's in this place and that place, and he'd be naming off all the grounds around Dublin, like, you know,
yeah. Of course you
on a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning, you know, when the lashings are raining, you know what I mean?
Yeah, really kind of hitting your
heart. Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. You know,
he is one person.
They haven't been through the hardship that we have, kind of that kind of message.
And to be fair, like, that age group where, like, you know, they're probably individually, like, Duffer, Stephen McPhail, Richie Dunn. You know, those are really good, really good crew. Even, Richie Sadlier, who sort of went to Nigeria as well. Like, you know, sort of some really good players and characters as well.
Yeah. Well, bringing it from there, I suppose, like, bringing it, unless there's...
Coaching. Could you get involved in coaching, or where did you get involved in coaching, where did that come about?
I did my... up to UEFA B, I did in the UK. So I always had an interest in coaching and the game.
Sorry, Bertie, how does that work over in the UK to regards to over here? Is it the same pathway or similar?
It's a similar pathway, yeah. So, you know, there's the grassroots courses, and then you work your way up to... and again, like, I would have done it as part of the football club sort of education. Up until a certain level, so just under the B license. Came back here then, and just naturally, sort of after a couple of years, went and did me B and did me A. Got involved with the FEI in around 2007 as a development officer out in South Dublin. So I was looking after the Clondalkin area. So it was in around the start time of the FEI were starting to put sort of feet on the ground, in the community and stuff like that. So myself, Jim Crawford and Will Clark started on the same day, and obviously, like, I would have been playing against Jim in the league here. So that was interesting. but now three of us got on like a house on fire, and I just went through me coaching pathway, got up to me A, and. Really enjoy the coaching side of it. Again, I'm probably not my role now is probably more a development role and not a boots on the ground. But I was coaching at various different levels, so in the DDSL, in the Leinster Senior League, the League of Ireland. So sort of have a bit of experience of coaching across all the different sort of ages and again, the professional level of the League of Ireland for a time as well.
And did you find it hard or easy getting into coaching? There's some footballers, you come from a professional level, then when your first role in coaching, what was your first role, if you can remember? Was it kids, was it adults, was it?
Yeah, like, and again, like, I probably would have needed it for my job at the time, so like, I would have been doing a little bit of coaching, like coach education as well. Okay. You know, so delivering coach education, you know, you need to be at a certain level of coaching. So, yeah, look, I would have got involved in one of the squads with the DDSL at probably under 11s, 12s and 13s. I was involved in the Glebe North, Leinster Senior League team, and I was involved in Drogheda United's League of Ireland team. Again, really, really enjoyed them, and it's totally different of going into... You know, going into a dressing room in Drogheda United when everyone's getting paid, and you know, coming up to the DDSL where there's, you know, 50 kids dropped off, and their goal is to potentially, or their dream is to be a footballer. You know, so it's a total different skill set required for each of them sort of development age groups.
We said that last time when we were talking to any of the guys from the FEI, and it's something that came up between them all is like. And because we look after under 13s, as we mentioned to you earlier, it's kind of like you may know what you need to get through to them, but it's if you don't put it the right way, it's not going to land. And that goes with like that age, and it goes with, like you said, when you know the seniors, then if you speak to them the same way, like, so it's about that learning for yourself. And like, that's something that I'm conscious of. How do I I know what I think I know what I want to be able to get through to them, and it is good knowledge, but am I landing it right? And that's something that we always
their development, isn't it? It's an where they're at in their development.
And look, it's a constant challenge, and sometimes as coaches we want to solve problems for kids, you know, but the best thing again for me is, like, we should be, if you're looking to develop kids, we should be putting challenges in their way instead of removing obstacles for them. You know what I mean? Let them sort of throw something at them and let them deal with it, and then help them, you know, it's in a really good environment, but they need to know what the challenges are, and they need to figure it out themselves, because you as a coach, again, if they leave you and go somewhere else at a higher level or to an international trial with the FAI, you know, they're not going to be told how to get out of situations. They're going to be sort of looked at and judged on, you know, how they react to certain things, like, you know. Great, so it's trying to put as many obstacles as you can and help them get around them. See, can they get around them? If they can't, some will fly through them. Some you may need to help to around the challenges or the barrier. So
very good, very good. So that brought you into the FAI South Dublin. Where did you go on from there?
So I was in South Dublin for probably 6-7 years. Maybe even 8 years, and I moved to, I got out of football actually for 2 years, and I moved to a company called Walk, which was the Walk Peer Programme in Louth, so it was a little bit closer to home, and again, it's something that I'm passionate about is people with disabilities. So it was supporting people with disabilities in the training, education and employment. I did that for 2 years, and loved it, and it was only a 2-year contract. So coming towards the end of that, then Mark Scanlon was moving on from his role. He was moving up to a skills job within the FAI, and I just applied for his role. Again, it was closer to home. I lived in Meath, and it just seemed a natural sort of progression for me, you know, because the Glendalkin job was a, you know, it's a small area, it's a small sort of number of clubs to, you know, Meath, and there's 45 clubs, and it's spread out over, you know.
So that was the Meath development, obviously, you look.
Yeah, and I was there for a good few years, 4 or 5 years, and became a region manager then with the FAI, so that sort of took me out of Meath into sort of a management role within the association.
Some journey to date so far, isn't it?
I'm not even there yet.
Right, so then, where are you now? So we take the leap then, was it into the DDSL?
Yeah, I took the leap into the DDSL. You know, the DDSL is huge, huge organisation. There's 150 clubs within the DDSL. A real sort of wealth of knowledge within the clubs. They've developed all of them players that we've spoke about over the last sort of 10-15 minutes, and have continued to do so over the last sort of 15-20 years. So I just seen it as a massive opportunity to, you know, I've probably altogether 16-17 years in football development within the FAI, and I've another sort of professional career from the age of sort of 16-17 within the game, and just feel I've a lot of experience, and I think I can work with all of them people that have been developing players over the last 20 years, and sort of giving kids an opportunity to play football, because, you know, within the DDSL there's kids that want to be professional footballers, and then there's kids that just want to go out and play football, you know, and there's two different pathways there, you know, and it's a massive challenge for a coach within one club, within one team that has that, you know, and it's equally a challenge for us as a league to try and provide opportunities for everybody, and I feel I have experience that I can do that, and I can work with the people that, you know, like there's a massive amount of knowledge within the clubs of the DDSL, you know, that's already there that I feel I can tap into.
So it'd be fair to say, Barry, are you the director of football for the DDSL?
Yeah.
And what would your day-to-day role be if it is a day-to-day role? I don't know, I'm oblivious to what your role is. So
it's probably a day-to-night role at
okay.
the minute.
Yeah.
The last 2 months has been, so I've got the Emerging Talent up and running. So we've been trialling probably for the last 2 months for 20, 10s, 11s, 12s, boys and girls. So that's been a big focus. And outside of that, I've just been meeting people and trying to get their idea of what's going on, of, you know, within the league, because I don't have the experience that they have of sort of, you know, like yourselves, running clubs and running teams and the challenges that they're facing on the ground are probably the challenges that, you know, other clubs are, you know, so there's a lot of similar challenges out there. So my day-to-day is just meeting people and trying to figure out, you know, trying to get enough information to put a plan together for the next sort of 12 to 24 months.
Because the Kennedy Cup, I presume that's something that you'd be looking at down the line.
Yeah, so the Kennedy Cup is and the Gaina Cup, like they're two of the
the girls have come on board the DDSL now. That's the first time this year.
Well, it's the first time of the Kennedy Cup, but there's been girls football in the DDSL now over the last few years. But the Kennedy Cup and the Gaina Cup are probably the two of the competitions that, you know, schoolboy football sort of looks to.
Because they've been missing. We were down there last year. Was it last year?
Two years ago.
My own youth club was down representing the NDSL, and it was the DDSL were down there. I think it was a little bit of a disaster for the DDSL at the time. I think they turned a team in at the last minute. Don't know why it wasn't trained, or I don't know why it wasn't put together. I think last year they didn't even enter a DDSL team. Is that something you're going to fix, or is that something you're...
Yeah, it's something that we have to still have to sort of see what we're doing. So again, part of my sort of last week has been trying to put a calendar together for the teams and what we're going to aim to take part in, and tournaments and matches and training and stuff like that. So that's definitely part of what we need to discuss.
Is there any unforeseen problems you're seeing that you took over there? Not major problems, but that's challenging you. Could you
Not really. No, people just want to provide football and they want to develop football. And again, some people are in sort of, like, there's a lot of rules that goes with administration, that goes with running leagues and stuff like that. And some people, you know, fall on the wrong side of a rule, and it's, you know, you feel sorry for people that are, you know, like I've had a few phone calls that, you know, people miss the age group by a day or a couple of days, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they could be playing in a year younger,
but,
you know, it's stuff like that you know, you feel for people, but the rules are the rules. And sometimes you can't do anything about stuff like that. But no, look, people have been amazing to me so far. I've really enjoyed it. My couple of months have been welcomed into clubs everywhere I've gone. And the big thing, like, I'm here to work with the clubs and to try and help and develop the league as best we can across all the, you know, for coaches, for players, for clubs, and for the league as well.
You said it there yourself, like, ultimately, no matter who you're dealing with in the DDSL and all these people, he's all want the same thing, to have kids play football and the best level they can, and everyone's happy and safe. And I know it sounds basic, but if everyone kind of remembers that, same with any league, you know, comes down to that. Like, you know,
if we can get kids, you know, into clubs at four and they're playing till they're 18, that's the goal. But and again, one of the challenges that I sort of knew was there from my role in the FBI is that dropout rate. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That sort of 13, 14, 15, 16. Where sort of life gets in the way for kids and stuff like that. So, you know, what can we do to keep more kids playing longer? Mm-hmm. You know, and there's health benefits and mental health benefits and all that type of stuff for just running around for a couple of hours a week.
The big controversy that was over, I don't want to sting you on it, remember the, this 30 euro charge?
Yeah.
Is that going towards that, Delicia, the emerging talent?
That's going towards everything. So again, like that was, you know, that's contributing towards everything. Like we're looking to develop Ballyown out in South Dublin, you know, new Astro Turf pitch, new lights, do up the whole building, and that will become a DDSL complex. So again, I've come in, Mick is, Kennedy is in running the league, so all of that sort of has to be paid for. So you can sort of stand still and not try and kick on, or you can, you know, kick on, but again, change is hard, and I know the 30 euros can be a massive challenge for people, you know, but again, I think in the long run, you know, over the next sort of 12, 18 months, when we get facilities up and running, and we provide as many opportunities for coaches and for players and stuff like that, you know, hopefully people will see the benefit of it.
And I've only one more question. Do you know the FAO Connect, is any closer to jumping on that?
So we have our registration system.
Oh, you have a different
system.
One, isn't it?
Yeah. So our registration system is I think, I know I'm not 100%, but I think there's an agreement between us and the FAI that it links, so they sync or whatever. So
yeah,
I'm not 100% sure now, but yeah.
You don't know when it's going live, though, do you? Or is it live?
Ours.
Yours, where it connects. Or start up and running, I don't know. I know that NDSL have a diff. Are you using the Connect one at the moment? I think they're nearly about to go live on it. But again, we'll have. I don't know, I was just throwing a question out there to you. One last question I actually have. Referees.
It's a challenge.
Oh my God. What do you think on referees? Right, the DDSL are short referees, that's a fact. So is the NDSL, most leagues are. Right. How do we get more? I'm a referee. Right. How do we get more referees involved?
It's a challenge, and to be fair, we've had a good few meetings with Rob Hennessy and the FAI over the past sort of month and probably longer since before I came in. But look, we're trying to run as many courses as we can. So we have a course on next week. We're running a 4-hour course for sort of 16s and above. Well, for anybody that wants to get on it, but they can only referee from under 11s down. But if they enjoy it and they like it, all they'd have to do is do the 2-hour course to become, you know, a full referee.
That's a good,
So we're trying a few things like that. We have a course on there next Saturday, and two of them are full out and fully booked for and again another, I think there's 30 or 40 booked on each course.
Brilliant.
We're trying to, you know, we're going to try a few different things within the DDSL to, you know, maybe support referees a little bit more. And again, one of the biggest challenges of the game are sort of sideline behaviours, you know. So
that's where I was going with it. Yeah,
you know, that's something that is sort of big on my agenda, and it was sort of within at different stages, but you know, there has to be a level of respect. The level of behaviour is on the floor. It's really poor, and sometimes it's loud and it's not aggressive, and sometimes it's aggressive and it's not loud. Sometimes it's from parents, sometimes it's from coaches. But we have to get to a stage where there's respect, not just for referees, for everybody, you know. And again, I touched on the dropout rates. Like, there's definitely boys and girls dropping out of football because of sideline behaviour and because of coaches' behaviour and because of parents' behaviour. So, look, if we're losing kids to bad behaviour on the sideline, like that's something that we have to. And it's a massive challenge because we can't have 150 people in the office every Monday because they've been sent off or, you know, they shouted onto the pitch. But we will work with the FAI to try and do something more. But you know, there has to be a level of personal responsibility as a coach and as a parent, and then as a club, you know, and we have to try and see what works best to support everybody in that. But you know, the bar is so low for behaviour now. And even referees accepting stuff is like, they're accepting stuff that they shouldn't be accepting, and you're probably sort of going, that's normal. You know what I mean?
No, I say I'm only a new ref, and I'd say it, and I'm looking at other referees and I'm going, I wouldn't, are you mad? I wouldn't take that. I'd be out there. Good luck.
And that's where we have a challenge with the amount of referees. So we need more referees, but we also need to look after the referees we have. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna play devil's advocate on the referee sort of thing, right? So I completely agree with what you're both saying. Sometimes, and not all the time, because it's 1 in 10, maybe even higher. But you'll get a referee where they'll come on and it's nearly their pitch, their ball, their corner flags, and you do as they say. And what I mean by that is they're nearly barking at the kids, and kind of they want to be the main focus. That's something that also comes up every so often.
Do you know what that is, Trevor? And I understand where you can get frustrated, where you can go, right, we've already a problem here from this referee.
He's just stamping his authority.
Yeah, he's stamping his authority, where... Sometimes, and this is me with my referees, and the referee's coming out and going, I'm taking no shit today. And he's actually over-enforcing himself.
Yeah.
And going, I'm absolutely taking nothing today. So he's actually nearly creating a problem before it's happened.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it feels like he's walking into a war zone. Just know what he's going to get when that whistle goes.
Yeah, but on the other side of it is, maybe there's nothing on the other side of it, and he's put him, and now, because we've had it a few times. No,
I've had it as well.
One other thing, and it's not a question, it's just kind
sorry,
of...
Sorry, just on
yeah,
that,
go
like,
for it, yeah.
Again, like, the referees are sort of walking into that on a weekly basis.
Oh, I agree.
And some of them are walking into years, so if you're walking in knowing you're going to get this, like, you're just going to go... You know, you're gonna put your barriers down, like.
Yeah, no, I agree. In places where they know, so for example, we're not gonna name teams. So you go to a match and it's X against Y. You know historically, plus you've done it yourself in that game, that it's gonna be a bit of a battle, physically and mentally and all that kind of. So yeah, I get that. But like, I'm talking about games where we had our kids in their 10s, 11s, 12s, and there's, you know, it's nearly like everyone's kind of looking and they're a bit taken aback by the action. But it doesn't happen often, but it does come up every so often. But another comment is, we had it a few weeks ago, and it caused a bit of friction, let's just say. And nobody's ever sure with regards to sidelines, with regards to our parents on one side, our coaches on the other. Some parents and coaches have one side, then other times it's the coaches the same side, which I think can be dangerous at times.
There is no set rule. I mean, what we'll do, Trev, is have a couple of referees lined up, so we'll get a referee in to explain. But if you were to take Ratto Tars, for example, they've only a viewing area on one side. I know Colesta have the same, they've only a viewing area on one side, so all the parents have to go in there. So there's nothing we can really do with that, but we'll definitely bring a referee in. There's one thing I just wanted to touch on.
Sorry, I just think, like, on the, there is sort of, the FEI would give out guidelines to say, like, for best practice, the two coaches are together on one side and all the parents are on the other side.
And sometimes they're roped in
the PDP. So, again, they would encourage the pitches roped off and, you know, coaches stay in their coaching zone or whatever, like, you know, so that they are good guidelines. Again, we had an event, we had all the under 12 girls teams play for the whole day there last Sunday, and we would have done that, so we would have tried to keep all the parents on one side, all the coaches on one side, and the distance from the parents to the pitch 100% makes a difference,
right?
100% makes a difference. And then the coaches on the other side, sometimes it can become a little bit of a battle if you're shouting across the pitch, and if a parent has to shout maybe 20-30 yards rather than physically standing on the pitch, which is a pet hate of mine, seeing coaches 5-10 yards onto the pitch.
I agree,
because again, like, you're a big lad. I'm 6'2", 6'3".
It's intimidating
for, you know, an 8, 9, 10 year old boy or girl. You know what I mean? Like, will they want to run out there and seeing someone 6 foot who's maybe shouting or raising their voice, like, you know. So there's lots of challenges there, but hopefully we can get to work on it.
There's one thing I've seen very good they were doing in the UK, just back to the refs, you're talking about bringing young refs in, right? So when you're bringing in young refs that coaching at or refing at 10s and 11s now for them, obviously that helps the refs push on to 12s and 13s, so it pushes up the age groups. But which I thought was a great idea, was these young refs come in and wore a yellow armband. And that signifies that this is a young referee under the age of 18. So effectively the sidelines are going, that's a kid, we can't abuse them. So it's actually teaching the parents now what it's to give the referee respect.
Chance, yeah.
It gives the referee a chance, and hopefully they carry their behaviour on to the next game.
And look, again, like we would have held a couple of workshops with the FEI in and around that small-sided game, and you know, like my thing is, like, if a referee makes a mistake or someone gives a goal away, like, it's non-competitive. Mm. Like, what's the worst? Like, happens? Nothing. It's down to you as the coach that loses your rag or says something that doesn't. Like, I've seen, you know, not shaking hands with referees, and you're just going, like, this is none that, like, tennis game here.
Yeah.
You know, and again, me speaking to Rob in the FEI, like a lot of European leagues don't have referees up until under 16.
Wow.
So, you know, like,
it's just carnage
down there, is there? No, but like, and that's why, like, there's not, you know, because it's like it's normal, there's respect, and it's and that's where, like, I just think we need to raise our level of acceptability of behaviours just across football, from coaches to administrators, everything, you know. But even if we lose one kid to that, like, it's just
too much. Yeah, fair points.
Daddy, the ad trap.
No, we were talking before, but I might as well say, you're a United fan. How do you think they're doing this year, or how do you think they will do?
Yeah, look,
the interview's gone so well.
I know, look, we'll have to bring it down.
United has had their challenges now over the last couple of years, and I think since Ferguson left, it's been.
Sorry, I'm smiling. I'm being like a cat here.
It's like you slept with a hanger in his mouth. Look, he's big smile. No, look, like the Joker.
We know exactly what it's like. Go on.
No, look, my whole childhood was sort of success, and Man United winning trophies, and you know, so I know what sort of Liverpool fans had gone through over the years.
Yeah,
you know,
nice.
Two airtimes.
Yeah.
But now look, United, I think. Look, they'll always finish. They always seem to, whatever team they have, they always seem to dig it out and finish. And that they're nowhere near sort of winning leagues or anything like that. But
on the last,
they're not a million miles away, though. You know, one good manager and one good signing.
Yeah, but how long have we said that? They've had good managers go in there since Ferguson.
How many times have Liverpool gone next year?
Oh no, like, we're talking about United here, right?
Yeah.
Just bring it back. No, but United have had sensational managers that have come and gone since him. But it just hasn't worked for some reason. But anyway,
I think, look, you look at the Premiership, it's so competitive. You look at what City have done and what Liverpool have done over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. So, you know, they've sort of consistently been in that, you know, in and around that Champions League spot. And that's probably, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world for that. For them at the minute, but like, City have taken it to another level. Arsenal now are taking it to another level.
Yeah,
you know. So Liverpool are there. So, you know, it's really hard. Like, everyone can't win all the time. Like, you know, and you sort of have to. It's really hard to accept, but from a United perspective, but they'll have the challenges, but they're nowhere near, I don't think.
And last one, how do you think they do against City on Sunday? Because the derby and all that, it's at Old Trafford, isn't it?
Oh, so definitely City.
It's just one of them. Like, you know, like, it wouldn't surprise you for them to be beaten 5-0, or it wouldn't surprise you for them to win 1-2-0. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just
derby.
It's really hard. Like, the derbies go out the window, but City are just amazing.
Mm.
You know, like, City are just, they're different gravy. Like, you know.
Yeah.
They could turn up and win 5-0, you know, or they could, you know, United could could sneak a 1-0.
I think that's why everyone will watch it, no matter whether you're a United fan, City fan, Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs. We didn't mention Spurs, who were
flying,
you know?
Spurs have had an amazing start to the season, like, you know,
a great manager, as
Ange Bob,
a Celtic fan, he really has turned it around. So look, it's so far, like, we're, you know, it looks more Bar City, of course, who are on a different level. And I genuinely think, you know, you're looking at Spurs, no disrespect, even Arsenal, if you're within a point or two or three of City come the turn of the year, that's really where you want to be looking at as a Liverpool fan, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, if you're, that, because they're the ones that can put the 10, 12, 13 games in a row.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to see. Anyway, I just had to ask you that question. So anything else you want to add before you go?
Do you want to plug out?
No, nothing at all. No. Just thanks very much for having me, and appreciate it.
No, really appreciate it, and best of luck in your future in the DDSL. Hope everything works out well. I'm sure it will. As long as you don't be the NDSL in the Candy Cup final, that's the main thing. But thanks for coming in, Barry. I really appreciate it, mate.
Cheers, thanks, Barry.